The following podcast is provided to you free, as is all our content, at drhoffman.com. If you'd like to listen, help support Intelligent Medicine, and get great values by shopping at our supplement store, go to drhoffman.com and click on Shop, then click on the store. Thanks, and enjoy the podcast.
Welcome to another edition of Layla Weighs In on the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Thank you for joining me, and thank you for sending me your questions and your comments. Today, I'm going to talk all about SIBO, or SIBO, S-I-B-O. This is the acronym for Small Intestinal Bacterial Overgrowth, SIBO, Small Intestinal Bacterial Overgrowth. So, we are seeing a lot more of this. There's a higher prevalence of SIBO, and there are many, many reasons for it. Some of the risk factors for SIBO, for developing SIBO, is if you've had intestinal infection or recent food poisoning, if you have chronic pancreatitis or you have celiac disease, or not enough acid in the stomach, hypochloridia, where then the GI tract is a little more alkaline than it should be. That could be a risk factor. But why is it prevalent more lately? Well, the chronic use and abuse of proton pump inhibitors, acid blockers, Nexium, Prilosec, GERD, gastroesophageal reflux disease, GERD, heartburn, acid reflux. This is rampant. And it also has to do, why do we have so much GERD? It has to do with the food we eat, the types of food we eat, our lifestyle, so forth and so on. But everybody is being prescribed a PPI, a proton pump inhibitor. I'm talking about your Nexium, your Prilosec, the purple pill, all of that. People are taking over-the-counter Zantac. They're taking Acifex. They're taking Protonix. Did you know that these PPIs are only supposed to be prescribed for about 3 weeks? And generally, not for more than 6 weeks. Yes, this is true, but doctors are prescribing these acid-blocking medications for the rest of your life. And the rest of your life, if you have a condition known as Barrett's esophagus. What else? Why else is SIBO so prevalent? A lot of antibiotic use. Strong antibiotics are still being prescribed by doctors. There's an overuse of antibiotics in our nation. People are even insisting on getting an antibiotic anytime they have a cold or infection or something viral. Antibiotics don't work against viruses. So antibiotics can cause this dysbiosis, all this, or this small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. Certainly a poor diet, especially one including sugar, because sugar feeds all kinds of bad bacteria, whether in the large intestine, the small intestine, and a poor diet that includes a lot of processed foods, because a lot of those processed foods contain additives, preservatives, and we don't really know how well these are tolerated. A lot of them are generally regarded as safe, GRAS, but, you know, people react differently to them. And you know what? What about genetically modified organisms? Canola oil is mostly GMO, so is corn, so is soy. Did you know so is cotton? I know we don't eat cotton. And so is zucchini lately. And if these GMOs have been made, have been produced to, they're really actually pesticides. And if we're ingesting these foods that should really be categorized as pesticides, what are they doing to our microbiome? They're changing our microbiome. They're eating up a lot of the good bacteria. I mean, these pesticides, they're killing a lot of the good bacteria, which is our microbiome. So we have less beneficial bacteria. Okay. And, you know, I have another question about SIBO myself, and this is really what I want to weigh in on. It's as if small intestinal bacterial overgrowth is now in vogue, but I'm wondering, is this the new candida? Is this the new candida overgrowth in the gut, in the bowel? Is this the new dysbiosis? Dysbiosis means, you know, bad bacterial overgrowth in the gut. You've got the wrong type of bacteria in the gut. That is dysbiosis. We have more and more diagnoses of IBS, irritable bowel syndrome. I was always calling IBS a diagnosis of exclusion because that's what you're told after your gastroenterologist says, there's nothing else wrong with you, so it must be IBS. But did you know that 40 to 60% of people with irritable bowel syndrome have SIBO? Very interesting. Very, very interesting. So lots of reasons for the prevalence, the incidence of SIBO. We are seeing more and more people with SIBO coming into the Hoffman Center. I'm really scratching my head, but I'm saying, yeah, antibiotics, a lot of people on PPIs. And, you know, I would say a good 50% of my patients here with SIBO have a history of having been on a PPI, having taken for a period of time Nexium, Prilosec, Asafex, Protonix, and many have been taking a PPI for so many years that they're unable to get off of it. So what happens? How does this small intestinal bacterial overgrowth happen when you take a PPI? PPIs reduce the acid in our stomach, setting up a more alkaline environment. That alkaline environment is very amenable to opportunistic bacteria. And SIBO can also happen when bad bacteria in the large bowel, like Candida. I mean, Candida is really throughout. From tongue to the anus, Candida lives with us. It is part of the deal with the ecosystem. With Candida, it's its overgrowth that becomes a problem that then causes symptoms such as gas, bloating, flatulence, all of that, even nausea. And these are the same symptoms as for SIBO. I've seen SIBO presented many different ways. Chronic constipation. I've seen chronic diarrhea. I've seen chronic bloating and gas. People who are flatulent all day long or belching all day long. I have seen really bad cases of SIBO where the person is chronically nauseated. So nauseated that their food intake goes down significantly and they've lost a significant amount of weight. So now I'm worried that they're at nutritional risk. I will tell you about one case where the young man was extremely nauseated and was doing his best to eat a bland diet, but things really weren't happening. I put him on a FODMAPS diet. What's a FODMAPS diet? These are the fermentable, it's FODMAP. FODMAPS is the acronym for fermentable oligosaccharides, disaccharides, monosaccharides, and polyols. FODMAP. These are all fermentable carbohydrates. Anything that can be fermented by bad bacteria will only cause more bad bacteria to proliferate. So by removing the foods, the FODMAPs, it is often helpful. What are some of these FODMAP-containing foods? Let me name some. For fruits, apples, cherries, pears, watermelon, dried fruit, apricots. For vegetables, and this is a short list that I'm really giving you. For vegetables, FODMAP-y vegetables are asparagus, broccoli, cabbage, eggplant, garlic, mushrooms, onions. But all of these vegetables are good for us, right? They are. But when you're dealing with SIBO, it's best to eliminate these FODMAP foods in an effort to rid yourself of SIBO. We're talking about a shorter period of time. Other FODMAPs, cereals and grains, wheat and rye, pasta, bread, cookies, we're talking about gluten. Under dairy products, cow's milk, custard, ice cream, yogurt, soft cheeses, all of these will feed bad bacteria. And sweeteners. Certain beans and legumes like chickpeas, kidney beans, lentils, soybeans, fructose, corn syrup, honey, all of these are FODMAPs. Now, this one case that I was just starting to tell you about, this young man, chronically nauseated. And we put him on a FODMAPs diet. He had undertaken a round of Xifaxan, which is the very common antibiotic prescribed by doctors to treat SIBO. He was not getting any relief. Sometimes it takes a few rounds of Xifaxan for SIBO. And I've heard that this particular antibiotic is quite expensive, like $300 to $600 or something, which is ridiculous. I guess Big Pharma needs to get richer. Anyway, so with this young man, the removal of FODMAPs was not enough, and he was doing it perfectly. He was really compliant with the diet. A couple of months are going by. Nothing is really happening. Then we tried him because we found out from SIBO experts that specific carbohydrate diet may be much more therapeutic in treating SIBO than just a low FODMAP diet. So with the specific carbohydrate diet, the book is called Breaking the Vicious Cycle by the late Elaine Gottschall. It's a wonderful, very therapeutic diet. I use it a lot for ulcerative colitis, Crohn's disease, celiac disease, diverticulitis, as well as diverticulosis, and intractable diarrhea, or, you know, diarrhea that just won't quit. The specific carbohydrate diet goes even further than the FODMAPs because the FODMAPs will remove gluten, but will allow you to eat other gluten-free breads and grains like rice and oats and polenta. But on specific carbohydrate diet, all the grains are removed. All starchy vegetables are removed, such as potatoes, chickpeas, all of that. Sugar in any form is removed. What happens is because so many fermentable carbohydrates have been removed, there's really not much left for the bad bacteria to feed on. And that's really how it works. Now, people will ask, why can't I just take a probiotic for SIBO? Anytime I've taken an antibiotic, I've taken a probiotic too. You know, why can't we just take a probiotic to crowd out the bad bacteria? Well, this is an excellent question, because I've also found out the hard way with some of my patients. Here, take a probiotic, and while you're eliminating the SIBO via diet, you know, starving the bad bacteria so it will leave your system the same way we would treat candida, and maybe give you things like olive leaf and so forth, there are other nutraceuticals that we would prescribe for SIBO, something called Candibactin, BR and AR. These are specific for dysbiosis and small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. They include things like berberine, okay, Coptis. They include Chinese skullcap, ginger, licorice, some rhubarb, and as well, some thyme oil, oil of oregano, some sage oil, some lemon balm. These are all wonderful nutraceuticals. These are made by Metagenics. It's Candibactin BR and AR, and you dose patients up slowly with those. Now, what I found out, because I've given both Candibactins and I've given a probiotic, but it's not ideal to give a probiotic in the beginning because the probiotic can join the party of all that, with all that bad bacteria feeding on fermentable food and all of that. So that's really part of the reason. So what we need to do is not give the probiotic until later. And Let me actually read you a quote. You have to think of it like you've got a bunch of bad bacteria having a party in your gut. And when we're adding the good bacteria, which would be a probiotic, sometimes they join the party and they make it worse. Okay? And a really good example of that is somebody following specific carbohydrate diet for another issue like ulcerative colitis or Crohn's disease. The rationale behind that diet is to remove the offending foods that are feeding bad bacteria. The same principle as for SIBO, right? Yes. But those people with ulcerative colitis and Crohn's, they can't tolerate lots of different probiotics. They can only do a few. Lactobacillus acidophilus is one. Sometimes their guts are not amenable to the bifidobacterium species as well as other species. And this is really an example of how good probiotic bacteria can join the party and make things worse. So during the elimination process, the diet has to be ideal. And really, I found the ideal diet to be specific carbohydrate diet for SIBO. The addition of the candibactins, starting with BR and working up to the dosage slowly. And then a few weeks later, starting candibactin AR, which is helpful, and working up that dose and letting the patient take it for a few months, maybe 2 months, maybe 3 or 4 months. Some people feel immediate results. Besides the fact that you've removed so many fermentable carbohydrates, the belly gets really, really quiet. So anybody who is suffering from gas, bloating, flatulence, burping, nausea, secondary to all that air, all that gas, the belly gets really quiet and is much less distended, and especially after a meal, which is terrific. So following specific carbohydrate diet, using the candibactins, that's helpful. For people who are really, really refractory, they've got to go see their doctor and get a round of Cyfaxan. Or they could let the candibactin do its job. Maybe it's going to take a little bit longer for them. And for those, if the candibactin is not enough, we would even do something else. We would include other herbs and things. Olive leaf, the oil of oregano that I had mentioned earlier. Biocidin is a wonderful herb for detox and cleaning up the intestines. Biocidin. You take a few drops of that in water a day. So these are helpful. And now prebiotics. The question of prebiotics. You've heard of prebiotics. They feed beneficial bacteria in the gut. But they also feed bad bacteria in the gut. Let me give you an example of a prebiotic food, asparagus. Hey, asparagus is also a FODMAP. Onions, such as leeks, it's a prebiotic food. It's also a FODMAP. So, prebiotics are not a great idea. You don't want to introduce probiotics or prebiotics until after the treatment of SIBO, when the patient is starting to feel better, less symptomatic, when they're, especially if they're feeling a dramatic improvement and are much better, they can then start taking a probiotic. At that point, they can stop taking things like candibactin or olive leaf, oil of oregano, if they were taking biocidin, that as well. So prebiotics are definitely a problem. It's not a treatment for SIBO. It's after treating SIBO, after the elimination, after the die-off, we then re-inoculate the gut with good beneficial bacteria, a probiotic formula, as well as possibly a prebiotic formula. This also can help with bowel regularity. That's been my best experience in treating patients with SIBO. Specific carbohydrate diet, candibactin BR and AR. If that's not working for some people, I will introduce biocidin instead of the candibactins. They must be very strict on the diet. Some people do just fine with FODMAPs, but for those with severe SIBO, it's really specific carbohydrate diet more than anything. Okay, and typically things clear up. They clear up very well. People get rid of their SIBO. But they're afraid of getting it back. Well, I remind them, don't take any proton pump inhibitors. No more Prilosec or Nexium for you. Be careful in your use of antibiotics. When you're taking an antibiotic, yes, you do want to take a probiotic, but you want to take it at least 2 hours away. And we can't go back to a poor diet of breakfast cereal in the morning with milk and all that and juice and toast and pasta for dinner and all this, all of that. We're feeding bad bacteria in the gut. Stay away from sugar. Stay away from, you know, GMOs as well. All of this is helpful. I want to thank you for joining me in another edition of Layla Weighs In on the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. This is Layla Mutin, RD. I see patients every day here at the Hoffman Center. If you require a nutrition consult with me, but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.